From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Tuesday, September 28th.
Another family that we spoke to in town talked about their daughter in kindergarten being told by classmates, "We can't play with you on the playground because your skin is black."
That was Antonia Hilton, co-host of the NBC News podcast, Southlake. Antonia and her co-host Mike Hixenbaugh spoke with me about their experiences reporting on the racial tensions in the small Texas town of Southlake. We'll dig into that a little later on, but first, your morning headlines. We began on Capitol Hill, where Republicans dealt a death blow to the Democrats' measure to keep the government funded. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell held firm that the GOP would not support a bill that would raise or suspend the debt ceiling. Republicans believe that raising the debt limit would enable Biden and his allies to pursue trillions in additional spending and enact other policies they don't support. Democrats have until midnight Thursday to fund the government before non-essential services cease operation. If the government does go into a shutdown, Democrats will have until mid-October to raise the debt ceiling or face a potential financial disaster when the U.S. starts defaulting on its debt. Next to COVID, President Joe Biden got his Pfizer booster shot yesterday, emphasizing America's efforts to help the rest of the world fight the pandemic.
"We're doing more than every other nation in the world combined. We're going to have well over 1.1 billion shots, and we're going to continue going."
Biden went on to encourage everyone to get vaccinated, saying that a quarter of the country can't go unvaccinated without us continuing to have a problem. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, one of the few Republicans to openly encourage the vaccine, also got his booster shot on Monday. And finally, we end with the Drug Enforcement Administration, which issued a rare public warning on Monday. They cautioned that a number of pain medications on the black market are being laced with the synthetic opioid fentanyl or the stimulant methamphetamine. This is the first public safety alert from the DEA since 2015, when they told Americans that heroin was being laced with fentanyl. So far this year, the DEA has already seized 9.6 million counterfeit pills, more than it took in the last 2 years combined. The number of counterfeit pills found to contain fentanyl has jumped 430% since 2019. Last year, drug overdoses killed more than twice as many Americans as car crashes. And now to our daily deep dive. In 2018, a video filmed at Southlake High School in northern Texas went viral. In it, several teenagers from the affluent, mostly white suburban town were chanting the N-word. NBC News correspondent Antonia Hilton and national investigative reporter Mike Hixenbaugh rightly surmise that there is a lot more to this story. Their podcast, Southlake, has been breaking listenership records since it was launched in late August. Antonia and Mike join us today to share their experiences diving deeper into the culture wars taking place in Southlake and also across much of America. Mike and Antonia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And Antonia, I want to thank you, especially you're coming to us from the back of a rental car.
Yes, I am. I'm in the field right now in Tennessee covering a breaking COVID story, and this is the life of a reporter for NBC News. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you guys for joining us. And boy, that shows commitment. I want to thank you both.
Thank you.
So Antonia, I want to start with this viral video from 2018. Tell me what was in it. What made you want to revisit Southlake for this podcast?
This 2018 video is really the stuff of lore. And what you see in it is a group of teenagers, white teenagers, who've been hanging out together after a homecoming dance, chanting the N-word. But when it went viral at the time in 2018, people in the community came together across all sides of the political spectrum. You know, there are conservative members, more liberal community members in town are coming together over coffee. They're coming together over beer, and they're saying that racism is real and they want to address it. And then this community council comes together, a diversity council, and they start to work on what is effectively a diversity and equity plan for the school district, with the belief that the school district is the right place to educate students about these issues, to address them, to hold students who take part in videos like this one accountable. And so that work begins in 2018, but that plan isn't ready until 2020. And it comes out in the months after George Floyd's murder. And now we are all living in a new political and racial context. And so community members who either hadn't been paying attention or in some cases had even been supportive of this plan, start to see diversity and equity work in a completely different light. Southlake actually comes to Mike's attention first. And in those moments where the two of us end up teaming up together and first reporting on this, I don't know that we recognized how big this story was or how much the dynamics in Southlake, this fight that became a fight over critical race theory, was going to spread all over the country. At first, it seemed to us like this fascinating political story with really great characters and interviewees whose stories deserve to be told. But as we took on this journey and eventually pitched and worked on this podcast, it became bigger than either of us could have ever imagined.
Antonia, for people listening who can't see you, what is your background and was it hard to report because of your race?
So my background is that I'm Black, and I grew up in a community not that unlike Southlake. When I open up in a USA Today piece that we wrote, you know, introducing the Southlake series about an experience that I had around graduation time where classmates of mine, after 4 years of me being in classes with them and working really hard, all seemed quite upset that I got into the colleges that I got into, and that ended up really souring my experience. And what was tough for me at times was I would sit down with kids who talked about the kind of taunts and harassment that they experienced in school, the way they believed their classmates or their teachers in some cases saw them. And I felt like I was being transported back in time. And I graduated from high school more than a decade ago. It was interesting. I guess you find that those wounds haven't healed, that I'm listening to a teenager talk to me about how much pain, how lonely they are. And then I remember just how lonely I felt. I think ultimately, you know, my background, though, was a strength. And working, Mike and I coming from such different perspectives, I think made this podcast so much stronger. And that the empathy that we had for each other and our very different lives made us better interviewers. It made us more patient interviewers. I think it made us more thorough reporters and made the series really strong. And so I would say the hardest part was just I left some of these conversations so sad that things that I went through 10 years ago are just still happening every day.
Mike, what was the most shocking thing that you uncovered in your reporting of this town and the school district?
That question actually makes me think about the first conversation that Antonia and I had. I'd been working on a written story about the diversity plan and the blowback to it in Southlake. And I got teamed up with Antonia so she could make a TV piece. And I remember telling her on that call, I cannot believe some of the things that Black students have had said to them in this school district. And you'll hear in the podcast, like comments, a white fifth grader joking to his classmate saying, how do you get a Black out of a tree? You cut the rope. These kind of just like horrifying comments out of the mouth of children. And I told Antonia, it's just shocking to me. And this will show you the dynamic that we both brought to the table here in this podcast, because her reaction to my comment was, that's really not that surprising, Mike. You know, me being a white guy who grew up mostly around white people, I didn't hear these kind of comments directed at Black people because there were no Black people in my lives. But what was really, I think, what drew us to the story, drew me to the story, was contrasting those comments and those experiences and those testimonies with how the community reacted to the plan to address it. And so what you saw is in a preview of what was to come across the country this past year, this kind of conservative grassroots uprising in town to try to stop the diversity plan. And so we wanted to explore that. What was driving this? What was driving this backlash?
Antonia, for the podcast, you talked to a lot of parents in the community. What were some of their revelations?
You know, depending on which parents you spoke to, conversations would go in a completely different direction. So, you know, one of the parents we really focus on, whose life story ends up becoming somewhat of a spine to the series, is a woman named Robin Cornish. And this is a Black mother of five students who came through this school district. Her family moved out there in the 90s. You know, she describes it as a series of dirt roads. You know, there really wasn't much to the town yet. And she immediately realizes that, you know, they're mostly surrounded by white people, that there's not going to be too many friends of theirs who look like them. But there's a lot of optimism in those early days in the 90s. And she talks to me and Mike about this experience or sort of awakening that she has over time as her kids start to come home from school crying, telling her about the comments that they've heard, telling her about the lack of action in some cases that teachers or administrators who were present did or failed to take. And she starts to realize that there's something lurking there underneath the surface, and she calls it Southlake's dirty secret. And what we found is when we spoke to other families of color, even some who didn't know Robin Cornish particularly well, they all talked about the same patterns of behavior. Their children being told horribly racist things at school, being made fun of. Another family that we spoke to in town talked about their daughter in kindergarten being told by classmates, "We can't play with you on the playground because your skin is black." And then when the parents drive to the school and they try to get an administrator to take action, they feel like they're left in the dark. Either it's unclear what action is taken in many cases because the district says they can't comment on what they're doing, or there's some resistance and a sense that these Black parents have gotten that the school district wants to protect these kids from any kind of accountability, and that they really want to preserve an image of the district as being one that is positive, full of excellence. And this idea that there's racial tension in the town is one that they feel many leaders there in the school district and outside of the school district seem really resistant to acknowledging. And this is well before the 2018 video.
We've got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Antonia Hilton and Mike Hixenbaugh, hosts of NBC's hit podcast, South Lake. You're listening to the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. I'm here with Antonia Hilton and Mike Hixenbaugh, hosts of NBC's hit podcast, South Lake. They're talking about racism and how people are trying to address it in small towns across America. Mike, why do you think this podcast is resonating so well across the country?
I think that a lot of people can see themselves in this story. You know, these kinds of issues were bubbling up in suburban communities across the country, in communities that used to be mostly white, that have grown more diverse. And then you take all of the turmoil and pain of 2020 with George Floyd and the election. We did some initial reporting on this before we made the podcast. I wrote a story for NBCNews.com and Antonia made a piece for NBC Nightly News. And that ran in early this year in January. And after those pieces came out, our email boxes were flooded with messages from people in suburban towns in Connecticut, and wow, Pennsylvania, and Arizona, and California, across Texas and New York. And that is when I think we both realized this isn't just a story about this affluent town in North Texas. This is the story of America in 2021.
Mike, what did the students tell you?
Wow. That was important to us, was to get the students' perspectives. As you've watched news reports of the conservative kind of backlash to what they're calling critical race theory in schools, the coverage has been grown-ups yelling at each other at school board meetings, getting in fights and getting arrested. And what has been missing from that coverage is the kids. What do the students think? What are they experiencing? What we found an interesting dynamic throughout all of this is, you know, I think although lots of students have made dumb comments and hurt their classmates' feelings, a lot of times the students are having more civil conversations about these matters than the grown-ups. And there's a couple key moments in the podcast when you hear audio recording made by students. In one example, a Black high school senior overheard a kid using the N-word, a white student using the N-word in class. He was making an argument about why if rappers can say the N-word, white people should be able to say it without getting punished. And she reported him to the principal. The principal called them down to his office. This is in the midst of this community grappling with this issue. And she hit record on her cell phone. And in the podcast, you can hear just gripping 10 minutes of audio of this exchange between the principal and this white student and the Black student as she's trying to explain why this hurts, why I don't want to hear my white classmates say this word. And the white student responding, "It's just a word. There are no words that offend me." And the Black student becomes very emotional. And what you also hear in this audio is how the principal, a white man who's overseeing this district, how he responds. And it's really revealing.
Antonia, we did a podcast here on the Recount Daily Pod that did incredibly well on critical race theory. How do you define it? Why was this such a big issue in South Lake?
The first question you asked there alone is like, people could lecture on this for an entire semester. And I think that's important to acknowledge how academic, high level this conversation is, because the reality is districts at a K through 12 level are not equipped and are not really engaging in critical race theory. And in the podcast, in one of the episodes, we sit down with Kimberly Crenshaw, who's the original scholarly founders of critical race theory. And this is something that was developed by Black and Latino scholars going back to the 70s and 80s. And it is a high-level framework for looking at how laws, Supreme Court decisions, and policies contribute to inequality, racially related inequities and outcomes. And it's a format that is constantly evolving. You know, it's not something that can be boiled down into a student handbook, an easy how to do it or how to avoid it. And what Kimberly Crenshaw reflects on in our interview is what it has been like for her to see decades of her academic work be dragged into the political sphere, for the language of her work to be applied to issues that really have nothing to do with what this framework was designed to give scholars the opportunity to study and to discuss among each other. And what you find right now as this fight spreads all over the country is that people are using the phrase critical race theory to describe history lessons that make white children uncomfortable. You know, just recently there was a report about parents pushing back against a book that dealt with Martin Luther King's life, amounting that to critical race theory. You know, these are facts. They may have elements of the story that make or may not make some students uncomfortable, but applying the phrase critical race theory to these elements, these materials in school, you know, it's really alarming to someone like Kimberly Crenshaw, because it's not representative of the work that she's done for decades. And her fear that she spells out in the podcast is that this phrase is being used for what she calls grand lying for political purposes, that it's become really a branding technique that doesn't have much to do with the reality of what critical race theory was meant to be. And I think that's now what she describes it as, like a runaway train, and it's off the tracks, and a lot of people don't know where it's going.
We're going to pause, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Antonia Hilton and Mike Hixenbaum, hosts of NBC's hit podcast, Southland. You're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Hey, welcome back to The Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. I'm here with Antonia Hilton and Mike Hixenbaum, hosts of NBC's hit podcast, Southland, talking about racism and how people across America are trying to deal with it. Antonia, what do you hope people take away from the Southlake story and from your podcast?
It's the voices of kids, and it's the sort of persistent optimism that I was so struck by. And then you contrast these adults who have all this anger and emotion in this fight over perceived threats to their school system, perceived threats to their majority white students in this district. And then you contrast that with the actual testimony of children who desperately want to be heard. And in this entire national fight over critical race theory, somehow their voices have been drowned out, whether it's on the political stage as politicians go back and forth about it, or it's been in some of the national coverage. I mean, it's often parents and administrators who are centered in these stories. But Mike and I were so intentional about making sure that children are at the forefront of all of this, because there are kids going to school every day having these experiences, hearing and experiencing traumatic incidents, who are asking for adults to listen to them, to believe them, and to maybe help them or do something about it. Many of the parents have these ideas about things that might happen to them and their kids and seem to be ignoring things that have already happened. And I think it's that tension there of the parents' sort of imaginations versus the children's real life experiences. And I think that's something for listeners to really meditate on when they're in their own communities, engaged, going to their own school board meetings. You know, have you asked children how they feel about these things? Because when you outlaw how we can talk about racism in the classroom, or you do not take action to address racist incidents in your school, or anti-gay, anti-LGBTQ incidents in your school, there are children who are leaving these school systems year after year, affected by what they've seen and heard for years to come. And if you don't listen to them now, you don't know what kind of school system you are leaving behind for generations. It's been really heartening. It's reminded me of how important this reporting is, but also how important it is for people who cover these issues to keep children at the forefront and to listen to them. And if anyone's going to figure this issue out in Southlake, it's probably going to be the children.
The podcast is called Southlake. Antonia Hilton and Mike Hixenbaum, I want to thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And now to the look ahead. Here's what else we're watching today. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin will testify before the Senate Armed Services Committee on the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Then on Wednesday, Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley will will appear before the House's Armed Services Committee. The high-profile hearings will mark the first appearances by two senior Pentagon leaders on Capitol Hill since the chaotic U.S. evacuations ended on August 31st. Today is National Voter Registration Day. You want to make sure your registration is up to date. If you can, help others in your community get registered. The White House is encouraging everyone to check out vote.gov for more information. 93 years ago today, Scottish medical researcher Alexander Fleming upended the medical world by discovering penicillin, the world's first effective antibiotic. Often called one of the most important discoveries of the last century, Fleming's identification of the drug was entirely accidental. Sorting through his lab work upon returning from vacation, Fleming spotted a mold in one of the dishes where the bacterium didn't grow. It took another 13 years for penicillin to be purified and produced in a large enough quantity to be tested clinically, where it was found to be a revolutionary success. Have a great day, everyone. This is the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. Our thanks to Antonia Hilton and Mike Hixenbaugh, hosts of the NBC News podcast, Southlake, for being on our show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod. Do leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.